the longest path. Oh, find the longest path. You said he is empty tonight. There would still be.
Hi, this is Lance Port now. And welcome to my first podcast. So we'll see how this goes, and hope you enjoy it. And today, as my first guest on the podcast, is Bill Gesarch from University of Maryland.
Hi there. Howdy, my fans. Okay, so let's see. What topic to kick us off? Lance, go for it.
Well, Bill, a few years ago, you did a survey on P versus NP for Zodiac News.
Yes, that's right. And most people thought it would be solved within about 60 years. So I wonder if now they would think it would be solved within 55 years, could be, and that it was kind of split, will it require new math techniques or not? I will add, virtually everyone thought P is not NP. In fact, the few who thought P equaled NP also said to me, sort of an email, that kind of like being a Nader voter, you know you're not going to win, but you want to protest it. So even the naysayers thought that P is not NP. Although, question, if you think P is not NP, no, if you think P equals NP, you're a naysayer. That's kind of weird. Okay, however, your turn. Okay, we'll just do a mini survey here. Lance, do you think P equals NP?
No.
Okay, when do you think it'll be found out by?
I have no idea.
No idea? Come on. I'm what kind of person?
What I like to say is that we're further away from solving P versus NP than we've ever been before.
Well, but we actually are making progress on finding out what techniques are not going to work. Is that progress? Well, actually, it's kind of lying, which is kind of a shame that our viewers probably know what I'm talking about, oracles, natural proofs, and the like. But in class, to my undergraduates, when I say, we're making progress and knowing what techniques are not going to work, they laugh at that. They think it's funny. What do you think?
it's like if you're looking for a killer and you've eliminated five suspects out of 60 million, it's hard to really say you're making progress.
Actually, I think in a talk of yours, you said there's been no progress on circuit complexity since 1989, something like that?
That's 87, yeah.
87, okay. But
progress is a little strong.
No
or
progress.
I get myself in too much trouble.
Okay, but actually, are there any new ideas in the problem, is the question. I mean, circuits, using techniques for recursion theory was a good idea, and the oracle said, maybe not so good. At least there are limits to it. And then circuits was a good idea, and natural proofs said, limits to that. Do you believe there are new ideas on the horizon?
There's been a few attempts. In fact, I went to a talk today by Joel Friedman, who wants to use ideas from cohomology.
Well,
steady numbers and assorted stuff that a little hard to follow. I think we haven't seen really significant new techniques for the P versus NP problem.
But that raises the question, do you think like really macho hard math that's already known would be the key, or do you think new math that's not already known that's tailor-made for the problem is more the key?
My guess is a combination. It's going to be some area of math that's already been studied, but it's going to require significant new research in that math.
A combination. So you'd say combinatorics, for example.
Not combinatorics alone, I don't think it'll do it.
Not alone. Actually, that's trouble. Combinatorics alone, no. Recursion theory alone, no. How about recursion theoretic combinatorics?
Right.
Well, maybe not, actually. By the way, actually, there is actually a field called recursion theoretic combinatorics. I've got a survey of it. Believe me, no, that's not how to go.
Yes, such a field exists. Let's move on.
Fair enough. Okay. Actually, as for no new ideas, I was talking to Carp at Fox. You weren't at Fox last week. Ooh, bad boy. True?
Yeah.
Why not?
The White Sox. No.
Well, okay. I was saying to myself, you know, a good reason? That's a good reason. Okay.
No, just too much trouble.
Okay. No, at Fox, I asked Carp, me and Carp came up with the following sort of conundrum. Is that there are no new ideas. People are not going into the field of studying P versus NP, or not people working on it, because there are no new ideas, and there are no new ideas because people aren't going into it. So we have this sort of deadly spiral back and forth.
I don't think that's fair. I think people are constantly keeping the problem in the back of their head, and if they see a new approach, people will pounce on it.
Okay, well,
I think that just we haven't been seeing these really new approaches in recent years.
Well, let me toss out a wild card here. I believe part of the problem is sociology, in the sense of a paper is written the day before the Stock or Fox deadline, and whatever you have at that point, I mean, we are short-term thinkers. We are perhaps victims of the MTV generation. Is that a serious problem?
I think this problem dates well before MTV. It definitely sets our field differently than other fields, that we're constantly in a rush to get papers out. So that often leads to more short-term, quick results than long-term results that you might see in other fields. I don't think that alone explains why we haven't seen progress towards the P versus NP problem. I think because we have seen incredible progress in some areas, just done a little bit at a time through various papers. I mean, look at the whole PCP literature, for example.
Okay. Okay, so you would say that the sociological factors, as I call them, really are not that prevalent. How about the phenomena of, Kashian's linear programming NP, out of the first one, was done in Russia, as I think you know, you've heard this said before, it was done in Russia at a time when Russia and America didn't talk much. They had their way of doing things, we had our way of doing things, it came out of a different school of thought.
Right.
Now we're all in the same school of thought. It's almost like a one-world thinking attitude, and we could be all thinking in the wrong direction. So ironically, did the fall of the Berlin Wall make the problems harder to solve? We no longer have different schools of thought working on it.
I think that, you can go beyond that and even talk about the internet making information so quick that we really don't work separately at all in some sense. As soon as a new result is known, it's known immediately. But I think that the advantages you get from this far outweigh the disadvantages. The fact that we can build on new results very quickly, and progress is made in some areas just so amazingly fast that this outweighs the negativity of everyone thinking the same way. And there's always the outliers, always people thinking differently.
Right.
And when a good idea is out there, enough people, it eventually gains momentum.
Let me both agree and disagree with you, okay?
Fair enough.
Okay. First off, I agree that it certainly is a boon to researchers all across the world. I mean, I can download papers from Israel or Russia or anywhere I want. I can email people advice for things. By the way, emailing somebody who knows stuff is still better than Google. Keep that in mind. So the thing is, yes, I agree with you. So for the ordinary research, for ordinary science, to borrow a phrase from Thomas Kuhn, yes, the internet is an absolute boon. But for the rare paradigm shifts, or the rare really big leaps of insight, I'm just putting out there that maybe for those kinds of things, it's actually less good. But let me again agree with you now. Having said that, Bob Salehi once told me that he got his thesis in topology, and he later on began working on Boolean-valued forcing, which nobody was doing at the time, and he was told he was nuts. So there will always be people who are doing things against the grain. I mean, I think had there been an internet to tell him all he needed to know about set theory, I think Bob Salehi still would have worked on Boolean-valued forcing, for example.
Yeah,
so I think that's reasonable.
He might have done it faster.
Or perhaps his result could have been out there more. Although, he passed around these handwritten notes. He would have spent months and months taking Scott Aronson's complaint about the world nowadays. He would have LaTeX them and formatted them, etc. So I'm just saying, I agree with you it's better. I'm just tossing out the thought that there are some drawbacks.
I mean, there's always drawbacks when we have such a rush to produce results. It's a risk to start thinking in a different direction.
Right. Speaking of different directions, does any serious theorist think P equals NP?
No.
Wow. I like that unequivocal.
Of course, this is a definition.
Of a serious theorist.
If you think that P equals NP, you're not a serious theorist.
Well, won't we all look red in the face if P equals NP? Okay. But actually, that's one thing about the P equals NP problem I want to bring up. Some people are working on it, not a lot. I think it's fair to say that not a lot are working on it. I'll take your point, the people are working on it in the back of their heads, that's reasonable. But the one thing about it, though, is that we all kind of know the answer, or think we know the answer. Like, I mean, if we were to ask God one question, it wouldn't be, does P equal NP, because we know the answer. No.
It would be, what's the first bit of the proof?
That's right, what's the first line of the proof? Or do you need higher cohomology, to quote Ken Regan. Okay. But the question is, though, are there any problems in theory where we don't really know the answer?
I think there's several.
Okay.
Um, I mean, certainly a lot of algorithmic questions, like is graph isomorphism.
Oh, that's fair.
That would be a nice one. And
factoring, by the way, factoring we hope is not in P for various reasons, but factoring is not, by any means, obviously not in P.
Factoring could very well be in P. I mean, yeah. The only evidence we have is that it seems hard.
And also that Mandarin has not yet. Graph isomorphism and factoring, and there are a few other Nash equilibrium problems as well, some game stuff.
It's a Nash equilibrium, right, particularly for, say, two-player games. It's really not
so
clear.
Those are particular intermediary problems, which may be in P or NP, and to be fair, there's no real strong opinion on it.
Well, I mean, if there's other questions, is RL equal to L? It's around log space, deterministic log space.
Now, people tend to think it's true.
Well, people tend to say it's true, but the evidence isn't so there.
How about people's R?
Most likely, P equals R, BPP, or at least something very close to it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so in 85, most people thought P was not R, as did you. Although, actually, the only person at the time who thought P equals R, do you know that or not? Who was the only one I know of who in 85 thought P equals R?
I don't know, Yao.
Your advisor, Mike Sisser.
Oh, Mike Sisser, yeah. Shouldn't
surprise me. His paper on expanders and I.O. complexity. In the 85 structures, or maybe 86 structures, was essentially a call to arms for P equals NP, or for P equals R, and I think what led to, in some sense, it helped lead to the NW paper to some extent. But the point is, though, that I've seen the opinion change from obviously not equal to obviously equal in the last 20 years, well, most of it in the first 5 years.
I'd say the most of them. I mean, also don't forget that there were results in the late 80s, before Nees and Wigderson even, that said if good pseudorandom number generators, I mean, if good hard one-way functions existed, then you could de-randomize classes like RP.
Yeah.
So, and those means are reasonable to believe, too.
Okay. So, the point I'm thinking is, though, that, so I think most problems in theory, and I would count those people are, we kind of know the answer. GI and factoring and some Nash stuff, we don't know the answer. We really go either way, but most things can't. Most things really don't, most things we know how it goes. I mean, we think we know how every single class in Scott Zoo collapses or not. Factoring, number theory, we know a lot of number theory. Numbers have a lot of structure to them. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there, a lot of hard math there that could be used.
And there's a lot of hard math there, and in fact it has greatly improved factoring algorithms, and we're able to factor much larger numbers than you would expect. But by that same token, we have all this great theory, and it hasn't shown. I mean, to take primes, for example, we just found out primes are in polynomial time, but they've been basically in polynomial time since the early 80s.
When its factoring has not been.
Where factoring has never been, not on average, not close to polynomial time, just doesn't seem...
Not in a practical sense.
Not a practical
sense. Although, the trouble is, most open problems are either... Oh, most problems are either known or unknown. There's a third category here.
Known or unknown.
NSA. The NSA. My neck of the woods. The NSA has proven factoring in P and isn't telling us. I doubt it, too, but it's possible.
You're right, it could be possible, or there could be another planet somewhere in the universe where they have solved factoring and P versus NP and all that, but it doesn't matter, because what the knowledge base is what we know. It's not.
Gotcha.
It's what's outside what we know. I mean, either factoring is easy or it isn't.
Gotcha. Fair
right? I mean, yeah. We're just trying to discover.
And you vote for hard.
I would say factory.
If you're talking about natural proof, seriously. But for the audience members, as you know, Oracle's way of showing that recursion theory techniques, so to speak, are not going to work for P on P. And natural proofs, or naturalization, awful name, but good techniques, is a way of showing that, essentially, circuit results are not going to actually solve P on P.
I think, to me, the relativization results actually really have guided people's research. I haven't seen the same... Natural proofs have been very... I hate the name, like I said. but natural proofs have... does give us some indication that the limits we have reached for some reason. But I haven't really seen that it's affected the way people work on problems. That people actually said... I can't solve this problem because a natural proof is in a way, and I don't think you see that as much as you see with the Oracle results.
Well, are people stupid? Should people do it that way? Should people think, damn, naturalizes?
I mean, if it specifically naturalizes, then you have to think, okay, I have to get around this issue.
Okay.
To me, the problems, the limits that we're seeing for natural proofs are problems that people have given up before that happened anyway.
So it codified and rigorized people's objections in the first place.
in some sense.
Well, but I think it's almost more like
an excuse. It's like, gee, we're really stupid, can't make any more progress, and then, oh wait, there's a really good reason that we were really stupid.
I still value that. I mean, if you take, it's still the case, if you can actually take the techniques currently being used and find some way of unifying them, aha, that's what's similar about them, and prove that that similarity is why that can work, I still call that valuable. Although Reuters told me once that they are like 6 months away from an actual independence result. That was about 10 years ago. He tells me they're still 6 months away from it.
He's always been an optimist.
Well, I don't know if you call it optimistic or pessimistic or sarcastic. Okay. Although actually, same with the Oracles. The Oracle results haven't quite led to clean independence either, I don't think.
Yeah, but, I mean, to be fair, when the Oracle results first came out, people did think they might lead to real independence results.
Yes.
And actually, natural proofs, I have to be honest, they have some independence results related to natural proofs, but on very weak theories.
Yeah. What I want to see is, there were papers that would sort of say, blah, blah theorem, blah, blah technique, and whoa, the technique does not relativize as being itself a selling point for a paper. I want to see papers that say, you know, blah, blah theorem, blah, blah technique, even weak theorem, and saying, wow, didn't naturalize as on a certain kind of path. But again, that would be a new idea, I think. If we came up with a non-naturalizing proof of a stupid result, that would still be valuable. What do you think?
Well, it depends what you mean by stupid. Non-natural.
Am I stupid? That's the point. It might help us to refine these things better. Okay, but we began by saying that Pierce is NP, you don't know when it'll be solved?
The problem is I mean, it needs some brand new technique. It needs something we haven't seen before. Could some grad student come up with it next year? I don't think so, but...
How many grad students do you have right now?
It depends how you count. I'll say 2 to 3.
2 to 3, okay. Okay, will any of them solve the problem for the thesis?
You know, they might be listening to this weblog.
He won't.
Yeah, sorry, guys, but I don't think my current set of students is going to solve your anything from.
I wouldn't take that from him. He's dissing you, man.
Actually, listen, if they just simply show that, say, the NP is different from log space, I'll still let them get their PhD.
Well, I'm sure they'll be glad to hear that. Although, if you solve P versus NP, then maybe an ACM PhD of the Year award for you.
And mine $1 million.
Oh, that too. Okay, are more people working on the problem because of the prize?
Yes, more people are working on the problem because of the prize.
Let me rephrase that. I already got into this. Are more people that are word of the day serious working on it?
I don't think the prize is really effective. I mean, what the prize has done is certainly I get a lot more of these cranks, right? Mm-hmm. P equals NP, P not equal NP papers. and I know you guys read by listening to this too. But $1 million, I don't think really. I mean, the fame that would have gone with P not equal NP, people knew about this already.
Well, I think it'll have a long term effect, though. I think that people like your daughter, for example, people your daughter's age, say 10 year old people. 10-year-olds are hearing the problem more so than we do. We 10 years old.
Well, what it has done—it's
out there more.
But it's given the problem publicity.
Yes, and that could lead to a solution. Seriously.
Maybe some high school student takes it on their life mission to solve the P versus NP problem.
Ken Ribbett did that for Franz Hals theorem. Ken Ribbett in high school heard about Franz Hals theorem, and he was the penultimate guy.
Yeah, but I don't believe this because I know this story, right? But the problem is every mathematician in high school wanted to solve Fermat's Last Theorem. So therefore, the one that actually did it thought about it in high school.
But my point
didn't is you that think, wasn't it your dream in high school to solve Fermat's Last Theorem?
This may show my weakness as a theorist. It was my dream to understand the proof that couldn't be solved. I've always set low goals, but achieved them. However, the thing is, though, I think more people want the math because of Franz Hals theorem.
And that brings us to the end of the first podcast. Thanks again to Bill Gesarch for joining us. And remember, in a world of complexity, best to keep it simple.